A very good morning to you. Mary Fagan here with you this Easter Sunday morning on Horizons. On the programme, we have the Pioneer Association of Ireland celebrates. We have Sean Lyons on Welcoming the Stranger, and Sean from the Knock Chinaclo community, which supports people suffering from addiction, will give his testimony, all in the context of this wonderful celebration of resurrection. First up, Francis Egan has been elected as the president of the Pioneer Association, and she's the first woman ever in the 125-year history of the Pioneers. She's from Galway. She's a mother of four and a grandmother of three. Thanks for joining us here on Horizons, Frances.
Thank you very much for having me. So this role will involve serving and leading going forward for the next 125 years, please God, that we'll have developed our association with support from all pioneers to move forward.
The Pioneer Association, you still see it as terribly important for the country.
Oh, I think it's very important. In my opinion, it's just as important today as when it was formed 125 years ago with Father James Cullen and his four ladies. It was actually formed to explore a spiritual response for people who are living with alcohol issues or under the shadow of addiction.
What is the purpose of it, Frances?
The purpource is of the Pioneer Association. We all abstain from alcohol. We wear our pin with an emblem of the Sacred Heart, and we say the heroic offering twice daily. Who pray for people who have issues with alcohol or who are in addiction and in recovery.
How did you get involved in it yourself, Frances?
I got involved when I was back in school, when we made our confirmation. My family were pioneers and we took the pledge of confirmation. Then when we came to 18, we took the pledge, the full pledge, and then I've kept it all my life since.
You're amazing. What motivated you to just never go near alcohol?
We come from a very strong faith-based family, where our parents would say the rosary every night, and we also included the heroic offering and the trimmings of the rosary. And then we were brought to Mass and benediction. It just grew from being a member in the local school, and then afterwards we would have a little youth club. And then when I went to college, I was the only actually person in my group in college that didn't take alcohol, but people got to know me and respect me that I didn't take alcohol, and that was that. And then they see me going to Mass on the first Friday, and they realised that it was a faith-based organisation, that there's more to it than just not drinking. And I have had a gentleman call to me the other day who I gave the pin to 18 years ago, and he himself had alcohol issues, and he told me that when he got that pin that day, he hasn't touched a drop of alcohol in 18 years.
That is fabulous.
That is just the power of prayer.
So you completely believe in the power of prayer, Frances?
Oh, very much. I have great devotion to the Sacred Heart. And I think the Sacred Heart look after us all if we ask him. And I place all my trust, as the prayer says, Sweet Heart of Jesus, I place all my trust in thee. And he looks after us always. But we need to ask him to look after us and to guide us in our life.
Have you a great fear of alcohol and drugs?
Well, I just think that if we don't look after our young people, that they could go down the wrong road. And it's very easy to go down the wrong road. So if parents will encourage their children to stay off alcohol, and never touch drugs, and talk to their children. I think it's very important to communicate with your children, especially in their younger years, the teenage years. But that is where some children can make a mistake and start taking drugs or drinking alcohol. I don't mind anyone drinking alcohol in moderation. It is a gift to be used in moderation. But it's when it's abused that it causes so many issues for families and friends.
And you have four grown-up children now yourselves. Did any of them go down the same route as you?
As children, I encouraged them not to drink till they did their junior cert. That was where I started off, just to your junior cert. Then when I got them junior cert, I asked them not to drink till they did their leaving cert. But that was fine. Then going to college now, I was quite worried that, like, with influences around, but all my children stayed off alcohol when they were in college. And none of them would have touched a drop of alcohol until they were 21 years of age. So now, if they drink, when they drink, or the odd time, they drink in moderation.
You think that if they stay off it longer, there's a better chance that
I think so. And I think, too, you see, they see the danger, they see the pitfalls people have made with alcohol, and they realise, look, we don't need alcohol to socialise. We can talk and chat and have fun. and have worse fun. When people have alcohol the next morning, they're not fresh. Whereas if you go out and have a good night's fun, they're full of beans the next morning and they go out cycling or walking. And so many young people now are changing. They're not going out socialising in pubs. A lot of young people are going now. They're not drinking and they're heading out cycling at the weekends and walking. So it's great to see all that happening too, because that is people socialising without trying to fall back on alcohol for support, because they don't need it. You don't need it. Confident young people without any of these things.
There seems to be a move towards not drinking, you know, that choice is there for people very clearly without huge peer pressure.
Yeah, and I think I see a lot of people going down that road at the moment. I see a lot of young people gathering together the weekend for cycling or going for a walk by the beach. And it's very healthy and it's a good way of socialising and having a chat with their friends. They have the support of each other then. When they go out, they don't feel the urge to have alcohol. And there's so many non-alcoholic drinks available also. So people do not have to drink alcohol anymore.
That is true. All those zero drinks, you know. And
exactly.
And people certainly are more careful not to drink when they're driving.
Oh, yeah. Like, I see all the young people around here, like, we live in the city. You'd never see them driving. They always would book a taxi home or have someone collect them. But the vast majority of young people realise you just don't drink and drive. Like, it's been advertised so well on TV and on radio that people know you can't drink and drive. It's not acceptable.
The Pioneer Association, though, has a kind of a social life of its own. Tell us a little bit about that and the upcoming dance.
There's a great social life within the Pioneer Association. Throughout the year, many different things take place. The big thing coming up at the moment is the National Pioneer Ball. And this ball is on in Mullingar on Saturday night, the 6th of April. It starts with Mass in the Cathedral of Christ the King. And then we have dinner and dancing in the Anbrook Hotel.
Where do they find out all the details?
Pioneerassociation.org. And all the details are up on that website. That'll lead you to all the things that's happening within the Pioneer Association.
You also have a newsletter.
So we have a newsletter, 4 issues in the year and a calendar. And it's a lovely read. It lets us know what is coming up and all the information is in the newsletter.
Is this an awful lot of work for you, being the president of the Pioneers?
A little bit extra work, but I enjoy the work and I love meeting people. Like yesterday we were down in Knock, we had a lovely afternoon of prayer from 3 to 6. And that was over then. We all headed across and had a cup of tea and a chat. And it was just lovely. So then we have our Knock pilgrimage coming up. And this is the National Pilgrimage. And that comes up this year on the 21st of July. So I would encourage all pioneers, if at all possible, to attend our day of celebration of 125 years in Knock on the 21st of July.
And if you were putting a shout out there, Frances, for people to join the Pioneers, what would you say that could attract them to becoming a pioneer?
It's a faith-based organisation, but if we say the prayer, we're helping ourselves, we're helping other people. You can live a healthy lifestyle by not taking alcohol.
Frances Egan, thank you very much for chatting to me this morning. I hope the dance, the ball goes well, and well done for all your work.
Lovely talking to you, Mary. God bless now. Thank you.
Fum Lees, Easter Magnificat.
The bride.
Thank you very much for joining me this morning on Horizons.
Thank you, Mary. It's an absolute pleasure to be here as always.
Sean, I want to talk to you about your experience working with refugees, asylum seekers, because currently you are the chairperson of TURC, Tralee International Resource Centre. First of all, tell us what TURC is for people who don't know.
Well, the Tralee International Resource Centre is exactly what it says in the tin, really. It's a resource centre for people who are new to Tralee, but more especially people who have come to Ireland seeking asylum. Now, you mentioned there about refugees and asylum seekers. It's like everything else, the terminology keeps changing. You know, we have people seeking international protection, people with temporary leave to remain and all of that. But over my many, many, many years working in the area, I think the refugee asylum seeker covers it for me.
When did you begin working in this area or giving support in this area?
45 years. 1979, I went to teach in Zambia. And I was based in a small little village, a place called Chinsali, which was near the Tanzanian border. It was a boarding school, a girls' boarding school. And we lived on a compound, teacher's compound. In that compound, there were refugees from Uganda, from South Africa, and from Rhodesia. And they were all families. And because I was a primary school teacher, as I got to know the families, I offered to help the kids with their homework. So we set up a homework club. I did it, I suppose, partly because there wasn't much else to do, but also because I just felt a need in these kids. I identified for myself certain traits that have held true down through the years working with refugees from various countries.
Traits of the people?
You know, traits of refugees, mm-hmm. with the kids. There was a sense that they wanted to belong. They wanted to belong. They wanted to be recognised. They wanted me to recognise that they were children, that they were people who needed validation. They just wanted to be treated normally.
To be seen.
And to be seen. There was also a sense of huge appreciation for what I was doing with the kids. And from their parents as well. Now, the parents found it difficult at first to understand why I would want to do this, because I was familiar with their stories and why they had had to leave their countries. And the man from Uganda, his story was, it was particularly heart-wrenching, the horrors that he had fled. He told me stories that I don't repeat because they're just too horrendous. And one of the men from South Africa had been a prisoner in one of the apartheid jails, and the treatment, like, he showed me scars and,
horrific. You know,
recovered injuries and so on. So that's when I began working with refugees all those years ago, 1979. And then a few years later, when I was in Australia, I was working in child protection. And one of the centres I used to visit was a centre for people who had arrived in Australia, particularly Vietnamese. I used to, unfortunately, have to talk to people about child abuse issues and child neglect issues. But again, it was within the context of the people and their children being refugees. When I came back to Ireland and we settled in Tralee, I got involved in the organisation at the time, CAID, Kerry Action for Development Education. Again, my interest particularly was in refugees, not just refugees in Ireland, but refugees worldwide. You know, why do people leave their homes, whether they're internal refugees leaving for safety inside their own country or people who leave their own country through fear of persecution, fear of war, or fear of starvation or whatever. And now we're at the stage where people are talking about climate refugees. There always seems to be another trigger for people to seek refugee status.
The work you're doing in Tralee at the moment, how would you describe that to people?
My role there as chair, like the chair of any organisation, is just to oversee things and to give as much support as I can to the staff who are working and to the volunteers and so on. My role is also as a teacher. I teach English there on a Tuesday morning to people of various nationalities. Quite a lot of Ukrainians at the moment, but there's also people from other places, you know, from Iraq, from Syria, from Afghanistan, Congo and so on. But we also provide practical support, you know, people who are living in direct provision, for example. We have a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful worker who works with people in Atlas House. We have another fantastic person who works with people in the Johnson Marina. And they all have specific needs, specific requirements that we can help with.
What do you see, Sean, as the most urgent needs in Tralee?
The most urgent need from every survey, not just in Tralee, but every survey that's done worldwide, is language teaching. The vast majority of people that I meet want to work. I know when I went to Africa, when I went to Australia, when I went to America, I didn't want to be hanging around. I wanted to work. I wasn't a refugee. I was illegal in America, but that's another story. That's a story for another day. I think the statute of limitations is up now if anybody's listening from the embassy. But language teaching. Now, we provide an awful lot of English classes, KETB, Kerry College, and EWKD. Like, there's an awful lot out there. Even the Church of the Latter-day Saints are doing their bit to provide those English lessons. But there's always a need for English lessons. And I know, of course I know that we have a housing crisis in this country, but people do need proper accommodation, particularly lads in direct provision and families in direct provision. Like, people often say, wouldn't it be lovely to live in a hotel? Yeah, for a week maybe. But can you imagine having a family and living in a hotel room? A few years ago, after the Late Late Toy Show, we got a call in Turk that they had a pallet of toys that they'd like to send to direct provision. And the woman who works in direct provision for us said, no. Like, what's the point if you have a husband, a wife, three kids in a hotel room and you bring in a ride-on tractor or, a doll's house? It's just not practical. Mm-hmm. So I would like to see accommodation options being provided. I don't know what those are. I honestly don't. And I know the council, and I know an awful lot of the councillors individually, and I know how hard they work. I do know how hard they work to do the job. But that is the priority as well, accommodation. And then you have employment. The language is a big barrier if people are looking for employment. We do our bit, actually, in Turk. We have a coffee pod, like a horse box outside.
How's that going, Sean?
That's going well. Now, NEWKD has provided great support for that. And we've trained several dozen at this stage refugees and asylum seekers as baristas, so that hopefully they'll be able to find work. They've also learned skills in management and communication and so on.
And where do you need the support of the public at the moment?
We were walking just a few days ago on the St. Patrick's Day parade with Turk. And as we walked down through the town, it was absolutely humbling. You know me, Mary, for a long time now. I cry very easily. You know? And to see people, when they noticed the Turk banner, the people that began to cheer and applaud. And I think most people realise that when you do it for one of these, you do it for me. We still have that Christian spirit in us, that we want to help people. We want to help somebody, not give them a handout, give them a hand up, you know, give them a leg up rather than a handout. So I would like people to put yourself in their place for just a little while, you know, walk a mile in somebody else's shoes. Though, as Billy Connolly says, if you don't like them, then you're a mile away and you have their shoes. No, but really, that I think if people could be kinder, and the vast majority of people, as we were walking through Tralee on the St. Patrick's Day parade, the vast majority of people applauded, and I think they speak for the vast majority of Irish people.
Sean Lyons, Thanks for chatting to me this morning.
It's been a pleasure, Mary. Thank you.
After the break, a different Sean from Tralee tells his story about the trouble with addiction.